The attention of the human race is certainly focused on climate change, even if it's because the people paying attention do not believe climate change is caused by humans. For the majority who do, there's a bit of a sense of urgency. So scientists and activists are working to turn concern into action. That includes things like climate energy action plans. The name is clear. The plans aim to push communities that adopt such plans toward the use of clean energy and away from fossil fuel use. This is Climate Week in Ashland, leading up to something called the Ashland Climate Challenge. We'll learn more in the moments ahead. In the studio with me here is Dr. Marnie Koopman, who's a climate change scientist at the Geos Institute based in Ashland. Marnie, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And a couple of guests on the phone. We have Matt McRae with us, who's a climate and energy analyst at the City of Eugene. Matt, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Good
morning. And Scott Denning is with us as well. He's an atmospheric scientist at Colorado State University. Scott, welcome to you.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
So who's got the best handle on the basic realm of what goes on in a climate energy action plan?
Well, so I could speak about a climate action plan developed in Fort Collins, Colorado, which is where I live.
Okay, go ahead, Matt Scott.
So in 2014, our city council asked our city staff to develop a feasibility study about accelerating Fort Collins' climate emissions reduction targets to 80% reduction in fossil fuel emissions by 2030. And I want to say that again because it's sort of easy for the numbers to go past. 80% emissions reduction in the next 15 years. Quite an aggressive target. The city staff then spent a year putting together a very detailed plan with 17 different strategies to reduce the emissions inside the city limits by 80% in the next 15 years, and found that it was definitely feasible, and that, in fact, by 2050, this would pay back about $10 to the dollar, 10 to 1 savings to cost ratio for the city. So our city council voted 7-0 to adopt this very aggressive set of goals, and now the city is putting in place an implementation set of strategies to hit that goal.
Scott, I'm glad you repeated those numbers because the first time through I wasn't sure I was hearing them right. 80% reduction by 2030.
That's right. 15 years, 80%.
So what's the major component of a clean energy action plan for Fort Collins that gets you to that figure?
Well, the by far the biggest source of CO2 emissions for the city of Fort Collins is burning of coal to generate electricity. So it's about 50% of our total emissions, and the plan is to replace that very large source of emissions over the next 15 years with a suite of renewables, and also to dramatically reduce electricity demand by doing home renovations and changing the building codes for new construction and things like that.
I wonder if there's a certain level of resistance you get from nearby. I mean, you're not terribly far from Wyoming where the Powder River Basin is, which pulls a lot of coal out of the ground.
That's true, although Fort Collins is very fortunate to be part of a group of four cities in our region that own our own power plants. So most cities in the country buy their power or have their power generated by shareholder-owned utilities, publicly traded companies that are then, have fiduciary responsibility to their stockholders. But Fort Collins and its neighboring three cities own our own plant, and we get to make decisions about how that utility is operated. So, if the city of Fort Collins and its neighboring three cities tell the power utility to stop buying coal from Wyoming, they have to stop buying coal from Wyoming.
Are the sources easily replaced or switched over to something else, though?
No, not necessarily easy. Very rapid build-out of alternative energy sources is going to be expensive, and there's a component there of buying renewable power off the grid, so that's kind of complicated. But you can buy power off the grid that you don't generate yourself, and these things do cost a substantial amount of money. But what I'm trying to emphasize is that over a longer period, 30 years, it pays back 10 to 1. you know, if I could invest my retirement account in something that paid back 10 to 1 over 30 years, I'd do it in a heartbeat.
No doubt. Matt McRae, the climate energy analyst at the City of Eugene. Has the city moved toward a climate energy action plan itself?
Yeah, so we likewise have had a climate and energy action plan on the books since 2010. In fact, we had conversations with the folks at Fort Collins prior to making ours to learn from them. I think it's important to emphasize that cities all over the country are taking action like this. This is certainly not just a handful of cities. It's a huge number of cities across the country, and we're all learning from one another as we go. I'd also point out that Fort Collins is a tremendous leader on this front. That target that Scott just mentioned, 80% by 2030, most communities, the bigger cities, are aiming for 80% reductions by 2050. So Fort Collins has dramatically shortened the timeline, and we here in Eugene are certainly looking to them to see, you know, how they're going to make that happen, and looking to learn as much as we can. We have had a climate and energy action plan on the books for some time, and we've been working to implement that plan. It's we're at a point now where we're looking to refresh it because just some of our understanding and some of our goals are changing somewhat. It's a little bit different story about the emissions here in the Pacific Northwest. You know, we have a wealth of hydropower, so our electricity isn't entirely clean, but it's largely low carbon electricity. So that doesn't tend to be as much of a focus for us. Some of the issues here in Eugene tend to be more homes heated by natural gas, businesses heated by natural gas. The natural gas use in buildings is a big piece. And then our transportation sector is a really big piece of the pie as well. And then one that's a little harder to quantify with a ton of precision, but is important for us to think about is the emissions that are associated with all the goods and food that we buy and use. If we look at the emissions that result from manufacturing a product on our behalf, even if those emissions happen in another country, we're the ones demanding those products, and so it's important that we pay attention to and take some responsibility for the emissions that are being put out in other places on our behalf. At least that's the way Eugene and a number of other cities, particularly on the West Coast, but in other places in the country as well, that's the way we're thinking about it. So if we look at those consumption-related emissions, it's another really sizable piece of the pie.
We were talking about clean energy action plans on the Jefferson Exchange. Matt McRae is climate and energy analyst at the City of Eugene. Scott Denning, also on the phone, is an atmospheric scientist at Colorado State University in Fort Collins, where the city has also adopted a climate energy action plan. And here in the studio, Marnie Koopman from Ashland, who's a climate change scientist at the Geos Institute. You can join this discussion on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Matt, are there numeric targets in Eugene's climate energy action plan?
Yes, there sure are. We have a fossil fuel target to reduce our fossil fuel consumption from 2010 levels to reduce it 50% by 2030, so cutting our fossil fuel consumption in half in 20 years. And we are on track to meet that target. We've seen, over the past 8 years, we've seen reductions on the order of 2.5% per year, which would get us there. So that target's not quite as aggressive as what Fort Collins has laid out, but we do have targets. We also have a greenhouse gas target that is aligned with the state's greenhouse gas reduction target.
So let's turn to Marnie Koopman and talk about the situation in Ashland. I hear some similarities, certainly. All three of these are college towns. All three of these have some ownership over their own utilities. Does Ashland, in fact, have at this point a clean energy action plan in place?
Ashland does not have one at this point. We're just getting started with the process of creating one. And so the mayor has appointed an ad hoc committee of community members. And I serve on the Conservation Commission, and we brought the City Council some recommendations, which include that our plan is community-led, so that we really are considering how any actions we want to implement might affect all different sectors of the community. And we want to make sure that all voices are heard from across the community. So we're just getting going, and that's why we're putting on the Ashland Climate Challenge kickoff event on Sunday at the Armory. It starts at noon. And that's just to let people know that this process is starting, that they can get involved, that we want the community to be involved, and we want to figure out what is the right thing for Ashland. Do we want aggressive targets? Do we want to go with kind of state-level targets? And where do our emissions come from? So we're
So are there, you mentioned state-level targets. There are some statewide goals then for reductions by certain time periods.
There are state-level goals that have been set by the governor and that are not mandated, but they are recommended, and that is what the state is aiming for. But a lot of communities do decide to take on more aggressive goals at the local level.
Is there any thought given to the situation unique to Ashland among the three cities we're talking about today? Because Fort Collins and Eugene, well, actually Eugene's next to Springfield, I should point out, but Ashland is a smaller town than the other two, and not very far from a much larger town, Medford. I wonder, you know, how much impact do you think Ashland can have, or is that not the point? It's just to make sure you're doing good in your own community.
No, we would like this to be a more regional effort. In fact, Talent has gotten started on their clean energy planning as well. And so part of what we want to do here is spur some action to come up with what are the best strategies for Ashland, and then how do those apply? What kind of learning can we have from what fits for Ashland and apply those to what fits for Medford, what fits for Talent, what fits across the Rogue Valley?
Scott Denning, it sounds like you've been at this the longest. What's some of the real low-hanging fruit? What are some of the first places you went to look for places to reduce the use of fossil fuel in Fort Collins?
Probably the easiest for everybody in this business is energy efficiency. So if you think about there's basically two ways to cut your fossil fuel emissions. First, by using less fuel, right? Efficiency actually pays off immediately, almost immediately, in terms of savings. And then the idea is to use those savings to finance the more expensive things farther out, like replacing your power plant. So things like better insulation, better doors, better windows, better air conditioners, better furnaces, better lighting, all that kind of stuff is really low-hanging fruit. And the city already has a fair amount of control over that through their zoning and through their building codes. We happen to be a pretty rapidly growing city, and so changing the building codes for new construction can have a dramatic impact pretty quickly, and a minimal cost that is returned very, very quickly to the homeowner.
Is there less distance to travel, Matt McRae, in Eugene, for example, because, as you mentioned, you're not using as much in the way of quote-unquote dirty power?
Well, I don't know about less distance, you know, closing the gap and making those percentage reductions. It's maybe not as easy in some ways in that because we have largely renewable electricity, some of the strategies we have are far more involved. They're more in line with what Scott just mentioned, home retrofits and building retrofits to reduce energy consumption, especially those heated by natural gas, as a really primary focus. But then focusing on the transportation sector and looking at how we can help people get around more efficiently, you know, less often using a gasoline-powered automobile. So those changes are a little more tricky. They require, you know, changes in people's habits and changes in infrastructure and changes in personal purchasing decisions. So there's a whole bunch of things that have to change there. And that proves to be a little more challenging.
Marnie Koopman, the very fact that Ashland has a conservation commission of which you're a member indicates that it's already thinking about conservation-type issues. So is there one particular area that is seen as potentially the low-hanging fruit for Ashland, an easy place to get some immediate reductions in fossil fuel use?
Well, so I don't know if there is. So that is part of what we're looking into, and we're so early in the game that it's hard to say what that low-hanging fruit is. And we have had some very extensive conservation programs on the books for a long time, and so a lot of residents here already have been taking advantage of those. But obviously, conservation, we worked with the Good Company and RVCOG a few years back to look at renewable energy resources for the Southern Oregon.
RVCOG being the Rogue Valley Council of Governments.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. And what that study found was that conservation was the low-hanging fruit. That is the biggest bang for your buck as far as getting your money back out of your investment. And so that report recommended that across Southern Oregon we start with conservation, but that we can also start to implement some more solar to replace some of our electrical use. And I want to point out that even though we do get most of our power through hydro, we also share the grid with Pacific Power. So we get our power from Bonneville, but Medford, Talent, the other surrounding communities actually get their power from Pacific Power, which is about 25% coal. And that does get imported from Wyoming and Montana and Idaho. So we do have a good opportunity here to reduce our fossil fuel emissions by reducing our electrical consumption.
We're talking about clean energy action plans on the Jefferson Exchange. Marnie Koopman is with the Geos Institute. Matt McRae, the City of Eugene. Scott Denning, Colorado State University. Here's a call from Mark in Redding. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Good morning.
Hi.
In April of this year, I was traveling through New Jersey on the train and noticed that every street lamp had a solar panel on top. It was daytime. So I don't know that they use LEDs, but I presume they do, rather than mercury vapor lamps. And that seemed to me like a quick and easy way to deal with it. Probably be rather expensive in the retrofit, changing over, but would cut down on massively on the amount of electricity used, and certainly not, certainly renewable.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks for that, Mark. Appreciate it. Marnie, he brings up a good point, and I've noticed that Ashland seems to have switched its streetlights to LEDs in recent years. How big a savings does that deliver?
I don't know. That's not my area of expertise, but I do know in talking to the city that one of their approaches has already been to, as they upgrade things anyway, we always have to be upgrading our infrastructure. And so each step along the way, they try and make it more efficient. And so they have been replacing our standard lighting with LEDs over time.
Scott Denning, are there issues in trying to achieve some of the targets you're looking for in fossil fuel reduction through conservation? Is there a difficulty there because there's no sexy device? There's no like this cool thing I can hang on my wall or put on my car or something. It's just, you're talking about weather stripping and double pane windows and things like that. Is it a little less to get people excited about those kinds of changes?
Yeah, probably is. But the city is focused and, in fact, fantastic. I participate on this panel with the city staff as they try to develop this plan. The utility engineers and people who run the Fort Collins electrical utility are targeting on-bill financing for this kind of thing. So basically the ideal outcome sounds like this. You call up the city, you say, I'm ready to participate in this program. City engineers come to your house and do an audit and figure out what your house needs to dramatically increase its energy efficiency. Then crews come and actually install those upgrades to your house, and then from that day forward, your utility bills go down forever. So, what's not to like? The idea really ultimately is that there's financing, long-term financing. When I talk about these upgrades payback 10 to 1, what you're trying to do is actually take those future savings and move them into the present day through bonds, through municipal bonds. So the utility would actually provide this kind of upgrade to homeowners for free based on these long-term bonds, and then in return, the homeowner's utility bill just goes down and stays down forever. It doesn't cost you a penny out of your pocket, and your utilities go down from the time you make the call.
And Matt McRae in Eugene, what are some of the steps that have been taken thus far?
Yeah, well, we benefit, like Fort Collins, from having a publicly owned utility. That's a huge asset for both of our communities. And so EWEB, our local electric utility, has been aggressive about doing energy efficiency in electrically heated homes. So I'd say that's one of the places where we've seen a lot of work done and a lot of reductions. The other side is that our community has put a ton of effort into making it easy for people to get around by bike. We benefit from land use laws at the state level that keep our footprint of our community relatively compact, and it means that the distances between homes and businesses are relatively short, and so to the extent we can, we make it easy for people to get around without using an automobile. So, tons of bike lanes, off-street bike paths, and assets like that help on the transportation side.
So Marnie Koopman for Ashland, the Ashland Climate Challenge. I see Power Down, Green Up, Shout Out. Tell us about the Ashland Climate Challenge.
Well, so the Ashland Climate Challenge came about as a way to get the public involved in this energy and climate action planning process, which is just starting now, and it's going to go for about a year before we have a community plan. But we thought, well, people want to get started now. People want to start saving energy. It saves money. It gives us cleaner air. And we already have these great programs in place. And so we're putting out the Ashland Climate Challenge as a way for people to get going right now. They can reduce their energy use by 10% and get entered in a raffle every month throughout 2016. They can change up their transportation, start using alternative transportation, choose to not fly. There's all different ways you can green up your transportation and also enter a raffle every month in 2016. Or you can shout out. You can start talking to your schools about maybe renewable energy for the schools. Or you can talk to your neighbors about getting bulk solar and saving a lot of money that way. And so just starting to talk about it and starting to figure out what our options are and to work together and actually bringing our community closer together as we start to switch over to clean energy.
Is there an online component where you register what your use is now and then and what it's going to be later?
There is, yeah. So the online component right now, at the end of the month, each month in 2016, you can go in and enter. You enter what your electrical use was last year for the same home and what it was this year. And if it's 10% lower, you get entered in a raffle. We have some really great prizes. The community has been stepping up like crazy. All sorts of different businesses offering great prizes for the raffle. And we've also been just extremely, I guess, pleased and excited and surprised with how much the local leadership here and the local businesses want this to happen. So I'd say one of our big partners on the challenge itself, on the kickoff event, is OSF. They've created four short performances on climate change. Those will be on this Sunday at the Armory as well.
Wow, you really are powerful. You got the Oregon Shakespeare Festival to do work out of the Oregon Shakespeare Festival season.
They have been incredible. They are also hosting a special hearth event, so hearth storytelling on Saturday night, and that is at the OSF Thomas Theater.
And is there a particular website that people can go to go directly to the Ashland Climate Challenge?
Yeah, so go to www.ashlandclimatechallenge.org. And all of the information about the events and about how to participate throughout all of next year are available there.
Okay, AshlandClimateChallenge.org. Much happening, obviously, with clean energy action plans. Ashland doesn't have one yet, but probably will at the end of a year. And they already are in place in the city of Eugene and in Fort Collins, Colorado. That's where Scott Denning is an atmospheric scientist at Colorado State University. Matt McRae is a climate and energy analyst at the city of Eugene. And Marnie Koopman, a climate change scientist at Geos Institute in Ashland. Thank you all for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us.
All right, take care. That'll do it for this section of the Exchange. We'll come back after a break with Garrison Keillor.